This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 1. Warming up. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about warming up and how much it's changed over the years and how you can find the perfect one for your needs. But we also talk about how to spend 10 to 20 minutes a day on improving your concentration and why leg spinners would ever have a short leg. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome back to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's a new series, it's a new season, it's a new year. And we're all chomping at the bit, ready to go already. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here as we talk about coaching cricket and playing better cricket. And joining me, as always, are two fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello, all. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you as well. Did you have a good festive period?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, really good, thank you. I wasn't feeling too grand. I've been ill for about 8 weeks, but I'm getting there, right. And having a few days off didn't do me any harm whatsoever. So back nearing my first run, which I'm going to have a go at this afternoon. So I could be in bits a little bit later, but never mind.
Well, if you had a few weeks off, you definitely will be. Also joining me on the line, last but definitely not least, is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hi, Lavers.
Hello, David. Happy New Year.
And to you as well. And were you ill over Christmas, or did you manage to have lots of
money? No, I seem to get through reasonably without any issues. So yeah, I've got away with it so far, but it is getting colder, and anything could happen in the next 6 weeks.
The only ailment that I've managed to pick up over the Christmas period is eating too much food and therefore weighing probably about 2 stone more than I did a couple of weeks ago.
But that's all right. I may have come in for that one as well.
That's all right. I did manage to get to the gym once, and that was on New Year's Eve. And the gym was closing early, and it was quite a full gym. Yet the way that they announced the gym was closing early was by somebody walking around telling everybody individually that the gym was closing early. I thought that's a personal touch that's very resource hungry, isn't it? Could have just made an announcement.
Yeah, that's old school, isn't it? I like a bit of old school.
Exactly. I think they wanted to get out and start their celebrations, though. So speaking of gyms and fitness and all that kind of thing, we recently on the Pitch Vision Academy website reposted an old but extremely popular article about warming up, cricket warm-ups. And as I was editing that and bringing it up to date from when it was originally posted a few years ago, I realised that warm-ups have changed quite a lot over the years, and also that they've become a lot more flexible, I think, than they used to be. There used to be a set way of doing things, but now it's a bit more, you've got a bit more flexibility and a bit more different ways of doing the same thing. So I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on warming up, how you use them and what role you have for them and how they've changed, and what other changes you'd like to make to them. So, Gareth, where, aside the basics of, you know, warming up to make sure that you're ready to play cricket, what's your thoughts on warming up?
Well, I think, you know, obviously that's the key part of it, and I think over the years we've got pretty good at that and have a good understanding of it. But also I see it as an opportunity to do as a training session. I don't mean in terms of batting and bowling necessarily, but incorporating a bit of prehab in there is also good, because you get everybody together, and once you've done your little bit of warm-up to get the body loose, you can then do some activation of certain muscle groups that may be fitting in with your own physical development program, whether it be one that you've designed yourself through listening to some of the experts on this show and reading some of the stuff on Pitch Vision, or whether you've got resources around you that you can tap into. So we do a little bit of prehab work around any deficiencies or super strengths that people have. And then also the other thing I think is really important is to get some functional movement in there. So we do a lot of fielding based warm-up drills, just incorporating some elements of cricket that we're trying to develop within our game, and ultimately to have a bit of fun, because any professional cricketer or aspiring professional cricketer will tell you at certain stages of the year, and those that have just retired will tell you, that the thing that they didn't look forward to and the thing that they're not going to miss from their career is going to be those warm-ups. So, and that's where we have got a bit better at being flexible and making them a bit of fun. And I think we've got to engage the cricketers and get them mentally ready and motivationally ready for the day. And the warm-up provides an opportunity for us to do that. And it's fascinating to watch different coaches and different teams go about it and try and achieve that thing of people being ready to go over that white line and do well and be up for the game.
That mental side is almost more important in my mind. There's a tradition grown up of warming up, which is great, because I remember it wasn't that long ago where you'd get some very funny looks if you tried to warm up at some of the clubs that I played at. But now, you know, it's definitely a key part of preparing for the match. But often you get the one big warm up at the start of the day, and then you don't get anything else after that. So that if you get all ready to play and then you're batting at number 10 in your team bat first, then you just go and sit down for a couple of hours. That warm up hasn't done you a lot of good. So I think the mental side and getting prepared and switching modes almost into cricket mode is a key part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. The mental preparation is key, isn't it? I think that the more and more games I go to now, it's so often I'm starting to see people being aware of that, though, and we're starting to see people rewarming continually. So people are, as you say, so often people have a warm at the start of the day, and the day is done then. But ultimately, if you're having a bat first, then the bowlers are probably 3 or 4 hours away from when they're going to bowl. But it's commonplace now, even in club cricket and school cricket, to see a rewarm at half time, so the bowlers can go and prepare if they're bowling second, and they can re-go work through their routines that they would have done earlier in the day. You also start to see a lot more flexibility in the manner of the warm up, depending on what the actual result of the toss is. So there's a number of variations that can come in. But preparing mentally and trying to stay alert is something that we do at school, definitely when we're batting. We have a bit of a policy of if you're in the next three batsmen in, then you have to be in the game. If you're after that, you're free to have a little wander, and you can, obviously you're watching the game, but you can kind of chill out and relax and do what you want to a degree, as long as you're still supporting the team. But once you're in the next three, then you're on the bench, as it were, and you're involved in the game, and you're sitting there actively watching and analysing what's going on, or you're at the side doing some movement work, or even hitting some balls again. But you're involved, and you're actually preparing yourself for what you're about to get involved in.
So how do you balance out that warm-up, Gareth? What would a typical warm-up look like for you at the school? Does it vary a lot between teams?
Not so much between teams. I think it's more to do with the situation that you have got around you. So I'll give you an example. I'm sure it's the same for Sam, is that you have certain games where you've got longer to prepare than others. So there could be a period of time where you get in a minibus, you get the team down to the ground, and you've got a very limited period of time to get prepared. You might have, 10 minutes before the toss and then into the game. Which effectively is, it gives you a maximum of 30 minutes, of which you've got to get everybody changed and ready to play. There are other times where you've got an hour and a half. So if we play a Sunday match and there's no school games and we're at home, then the guys will come in earlier and we have a more prolonged warm-up. So I think you've got to be flexible, not just around your day, but also around the circumstances that you have. And I think it's really important that we have a framework of what a 20-minute warm-up looks like, what a 10-minute warm-up looks like, and what an hour and a half warm-up looks like, because we've got to make those effective. And at certain times, with rain breaks or delays on motorways or whatever the case may be, it's going to throw those up. So we don't really have a typical one. But if I give you the Sunday example, guys would come in an hour and a half beforehand. They'd get 20 minutes of net time, so the batters can go and do throwdowns, the bowlers can get themselves ready to do some bowling in the nets. Then the bowlers go out to the middle and make sure that their run-ups are marked up and they know what the ends look like, because obviously the ends can be very different in terms of slope and wind and all of those things that we're usually associated with. Then we get everybody in to do some activation work if they haven't done their stuff beforehand. We do a team drill, and then it's individual time up until the time that the toss is made. And obviously when you get to the toss, it either gives you an extra few minutes to work with the bowlers, if we're going to be having a bat first, or the bowlers go in and get themselves ready and then come back out and do a couple of run-throughs before they go out into the middle and start doing their stuff. So, you know, I think that the notion of having a typical warm-up is a failed one, because so many things can change around any given day. But it's important to have a framework for each of the potential circumstances that come around.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And that's what came out of this article, redoing this article, is that it really comes down to understanding what situation you're in and then being able to adapt to those particular circumstances. And then that's going to make two warm-ups very, very different. All right, let's wrap up this section of the show with a yes-no round. If you're a new listener, then let me explain that to you. There are three questions. These questions can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more panel members want to say. I'm in charge of the questions, so here comes the first one. First question: perfection is like chasing the horizon.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question: MS Dhoni was the greatest test wicketkeeper captain.
Yes.
Yes.
Ooh. Third question: you can have a useful outdoor net in December in England.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
And that is thanks to someone who posted up a picture of two people on Twitter, of two people who were having a net on December the 20th.
And I think it was in Yorkshire of all places as well, wasn't it?
it was Lancashire,
was it? Lancashire, crikey, that's not going to be warm, is it?
Ramsbottom
Cricket Club, fantastic, great work.
Well played, lads, well played. Okay, it's mailbag time on the show now, and what that means is that we answer a couple of questions. Those questions are sent in to the show by listeners to this very show or by readers of the Pitch Vision Academy website, and the best question wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and you can send your question in, and you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and that is exactly what Anyat has done. And Anyat has posted a link to one of our old articles about improving your concentration. And if you go to the show notes, you'll see a link to that. And the article was called How to Improve Your Cricket Concentration in 20 Minutes a Day. And here's Anyat's question. In a recent article, you told us that tapping ball on bat for 10 minutes twice a day improves your concentration. Should I use the top or the bottom hand? I use both hands on one handle and the other on the sticker with a tennis ball. Is that good, or should I use a proper cricket ball? So we had lots of questions about improving his concentration with this particular technique that we talked about, which was off the back of a piece of research which said it improved your concentration levels if you just tapped a ball on the bat for a few minutes a day. So first of all, what do you think of this particular piece of research, guys? And can we offer Anyat any feedback on how he's doing it and any ways to improve on it?
Well, first thing for me, I'm interested in the piece of research, but I'm not sure it's broad enough for me to take it as a bit of verbatim advice. So I'd want to see a little bit more depth to it, more numbers to it, a bigger field of evidence, really, before it would influence my coaching significantly. However, on the whole drill stuff of having a bat in your hand and tapping a ball on it, there's some really interesting evidence about in golf in particular, about doing things exactly like that. And the aim of that isn't necessarily concentration-based, but more about getting the golf club and the body to act more as one. And there's some fantastic stuff of Tiger Woods in his youth bouncing a ball up and down on a club and doing various different things with the body and then hitting a wonderful shot off a full toss straight down the middle of a fairway, where a number of other coaches and players have done that over the years to try and get the relationship between the implement and the body to work. In terms of it working as a concentration piece, as I say, I'd like to see a little bit more in terms of the evidence to see how that stacks up and whether it can work across a number of different age groups and experience levels within the game, ranging from, you know, somebody who's a professional cricketer all the way down to somebody who's starting up, and which time of that journey between the one, you know, the startup and the end of your career, it has its most effect. So those are the things that I'd like to see from research before I made it part of my coaching practice.
The reason I liked it in the first place, somebody did this research and sent it in to us, which was great. We always like that kind of thing. But the reason I particularly liked it was that if we often get questions about what can I do at home on my own? I haven't got anyone to work with. I've only got my kit. How can I improve my game? And if it's going to take you 10 minutes a day, if you're tapping the bat on the ball, then why not if you've got nothing else to do? I mean, probably replacing your entire training program by doing this is not the best of ideas. But if you're at home and you're thinking, I want to do something, then why not give it a go? You might find that it works for you. You might find that it makes no difference at all, but it's worth having a stab at it.
It's not going to do any harm, is it? I mean, at the end of the day, if it's not taken away from the other stuff that you put around you in terms of your cricket, it's not going to do any harm to you at all.
Yeah, I think I was about to say exactly the same thing. I can't see how anyone can draw a negative from it, apart from it's using up a little bit of your time. But if you've got the time, then it's worth giving a go. Similar to Gareth's, I think it's a really good study, but it's a trial study in my opinion at the moment. And obviously, when we're starting to get scientific, the data size we're looking for is probably a little bit bigger than he's working with, and then the type of subject he's got, again, which Gareth's mentioned, would be interesting to see separate groups of different abilities and age ranges, etc., and male and female as well, just to see how things develop. But so it's something that we do, probably not with a particularly scientific backing, but it's something we'll do when guys are waiting to bat. So if guys are sitting there for 10, 15, 20 minutes plus, then it's not always possible to go and hit some balls and have a net, but you can do a few tap-ups, you can do a few tricks with the bat, just to wake you up, get the hand-eye working again, and just try and get those eyes tracking a ball again onto the bat, just so when you go out and face the first ball, you're a little bit more prepared. Not that that has any great scientific backing, but even if it's from the point of view of increasing the batter's confidence that they feel they're better prepared, then that's a good thing for us to do. We don't implement it as a program per se, but it's definitely something we recommend that while guys are getting prepared or waiting, and they've got their pads on at number three, and if it ever occurs that we're 200 for none, which would be great, but if that does happen, just try and prepare yourself through doing some of the skills like that, then it can only be a good thing or a neutral thing.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, the only thing you can do is, I mean, to go back to the original question regarding, you know, should he use a cricket ball, should he use a tennis ball, which hand should he use? I mean, I guess the answer is, because we don't really know how effective this is in the first place, just try different things. See what works for you. And if nothing works for you, then move on to something else. You know, there was a study once, I think I've cited it a few times, that said that if players played Sudoku before they went out the batting, then their perception of their focus was better. So, I mean, whether that is true in all cases, again, it's another one of those where you're not going to know for sure until you test it out in all cases. But if you try it with a tennis ball, you try it with a cricket ball, whatever, and it works for you, carry on. And if it doesn't work for you, then look for something else, maybe break out the Sudoku.
I think if you go back to our warm-up program, the conversation we had earlier on, one of the increasingly noticeable things is how players take ownership of their own warm-up a little bit more, and they know what works for them. And particularly at the higher levels, you'll see there's a lot of group work that goes on, but then there's a bit of individual time where people understand what they need to do to prepare, and it's going to be similar for this. It will work for different people in different ways, as you said, and I mean, if we have to employ a Sudoku coach at school, then that's what we'll do. Again, we'd probably trial it a little bit longer before we started advertising for the position. But yeah, you never know.
Well, if you do get one, can you pass them on to me? Because I think it takes me about 15 minutes to do the easy ones.
I'd be proud of 15 minutes.
Okay, hope that helps you, Anya. Get in there, get stuck in. Next question is from Ryan. And Ryan says, I'm wondering why leg spinners often have a bat pad on the leg side to a right-handed batsman when the ball is turning to the off. Wouldn't it be more likely that a catch would come on the off side?
Okay, well, there's a few ways to look at this. And obviously, it's not exclusive that things will work that way. And often we'll have men both sides, and sometimes people will have fielders on the offside or for an off spinner on the leg side. It's not exclusively like that, but I know exactly what you're saying. First of all, I think about where the ball's coming from and which side of the bat it's looking to hit, and where that edge is likely to go. So obviously, if it's landing on leg stump or outside leg, then it's more likely to be coming in the direction of the inside edge. So that's firstly a reason that side of the bat is more exposed. And secondly, to go from a position outside leg to a silly point position is actually a little bit more difficult to do in terms of its deflection off the bat, because an edge would be going finer, and if it's off the face of the bat, it would presumably be going down a little bit more. So it's probably less of an opportunity. Obviously, if it hits the inside edge of the bat, it then has the opportunity to loop up in the air and create the chance. If it hits the outside of the edge of the bat and goes square, it doesn't loop up, so it makes the chance a little more difficult. So that would be the first thing I would say about why the first option would be there, because of where the pad is and how the chance is created and obviously made more catchable as well.
I think my thought is that you don't actually... you might see it on telly, on test matches, but you don't see it a lot in club and school cricket, do you?
No, you don't. You don't see it half as much, and so it's less relevant. The other thing I think that leg side guy comes into play is obviously the bounce off of the pitch as well, because if the ball bounces a bit more, it's likely to hit the edge on the higher up the bat in test match cricket, because the wickets generally bounce more than they do in club cricket. So it's more relevant, I'd say, on telly than it is necessarily in a lot of our environments that we play in around the world at normal level, you know, at recreational level. The other thing is, it's all about, to me, where the batter plays. So an example would be Nasser saying when he defended a spinner with his bat and his pad absolutely jammed together. So the offside fielder, whether it was for a leg spinner or for an off spinner, was more likely to come into play because the ball is less likely to get to the leg side. Whereas when a guy, which is the way that most people teach to play spin defensively now, getting the bat out in front, with that extra bounce that a leg spinner can get, the ball can often hit the bat and go to the leg side because people are playing further out in front of themselves. So you've got to take the batter into consideration as well. Nasser and Sachin Tendulkar was a classic, actually. We would always have a bat pad offside to him rather than a bat pad leg side, irrespective of which way the ball was spinning, because of the way that he viced that bat in against his pad, the ball would ricochet around on that. And I remember Sean Udall getting him out in Mumbai, caught bat pad offside doing exactly that. So it was off spinner going into the bat, but still we had a guy on the offside ready for that catch, and unfortunately Ian Bell took it, and that was the end of Mr. Sachin. So it's about how the batter plays, the pitch plays, as well as the way that the ball spins.
I think that comes back nicely to one of the things that we talk about a lot, which is players' adaptability and how they're able to adjust to situations and read situations and read different players. And if they can identify that, they can work out how a player's playing the ball, if they're trying to get out and meet the ball very early, like a Dhoni would do, getting his hands well out in front, or playing the ball very late and back past the front pad like a Tendulkar would do, and you can then set your field accordingly. Some players may try and adapt between, depending on where the fielders are, and that makes life a little bit more difficult for the bowler. But I think that adaptability and ability to identify different methods of playing is really, really useful.
And now it's the return of the soapbox. That is 60 seconds on the clock. That is one of the members of the team who gets to talk uninterrupted about any topic that they like, as long as it's got something to do with cricket somewhere on the line. And starting this new series, it's Mark Garraway. Garras, 60 seconds on the clock. It's over to you.
Well, I've just had the pleasure of spending some time in India with two of our squads over the pre-Christmas period. And one of the biggest learners, for particularly the juniors, was the lack of dependency that the Indian counterparts had on coaches and people to do things for them. And I'll give you an example of that. We got speaking to a lad that played against us in one of the international grounds that we played in Chandigarh. And he had travelled for 2.5 hours to get to the game, 14 years old. He'd been on a train and two buses to get there. When he got to the ground, he was there at 9 o'clock. He was part of the team that pulled off the covers, that put the stumps out, that did their own warm-ups, that did their own fielding drills, that got involved in practicing their batting ahead of the game without any coach being in sight. And yet they were fully prepared to play the game. And I just looked at that and contrasted that to sometimes the reliance on the coach to tell everybody what they're doing, to do everything, for kids waiting for the coach to feed them balls, and all of those things that we see within our world, within the English game, and the learning that we can have off of the Indian counterparts. And it was interesting to watch the way that our players adapted over the course of the 2 weeks we were out there, and in fact the first week back at term now, where they're starting to do things for themselves. So a lot of learners were out there, and I thought I'd pass that message on to our listeners today. And can we learn from our Indian counterparts? And the answer is definitely yes.
That's all we've got time for on the show this week. We're going to leave you, but before we do, we're just going to wrap up with the winner of this week's competition, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a couple of questions. The first one was from Anyat about tapping the bat. And the second one was from Ryan about why leg spinners have a bat pad man on the leg side. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I'm going to go with Ryan's one this week, because it's interesting there, because we don't use short catches either side of a wicket a great deal outside of the longer formats of a game, and maybe we should, but we've got to have some understanding of why we put one person one side or the other. So I like Ryan's question today, and hopefully that's built some awareness for those around the world that might deploy those fielders.
Yeah, congratulations, Ryan. That short leg position is a tricky one. It's tricky to field there. It can be hard work, especially with a leg spinner bowling. There's some bad balls thrown in there sometimes, and that's a difficult position to be in. You can be in the firing line there. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question to the show, they wanted to win that prize, how could they do that?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also find us on Twitter. If you go to @pitchvisionacad, you'll find us there. And we're also on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, you can join in the fun there. Lots of people talking about cricket and looking at the videos and all that kind of thing. If you want to listen to this show every week, then you can do so by going to your favourite podcast app or program on your computer or your tablet or your phone. Doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us lurking around in there. iTunes is a popular one, as is the podcast app for Apple and Android equivalent, Windows Phone as well, as a couple of those knocking about. Or if you want to do it old school, you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. Until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks, guys.